Hey everybody, it's Bay Ragney here of the Rock and Ragney Show. We got another episode ready for you to listen to, and I'm excited with this. So I got to talk to the other day Mr. Greg Chiasson, which you might remember, bass player extraordinaire from the band Badlands, which featured Jake E. Lee. And a few years back, he actually rejoined Jake in the Red Dragon Cartel. And now he's got his own project, his own band. They're called the Kings of Dust. So I sat down with Greg and I talked to him about all of these bands, as well as the real reason he left the Red Dragon Cartel, which was a very serious cancer. I'm not even going to say a cancer scare. He had cancer and was basically given a death sentence of 8 to like 11 months to live. And it's now like 4-plus years later, and he's still here. He's better than ever. Kings of Dust are ready to roll. The album is out, and it sounds very, very much to me like a very, it's very 70s influence, but it sounds very much like a almost like a Badlands album. It's a killer album. You got to check it out. And we also talk about the legendary Chiasson brothers, bass-playing brothers. His brother Kenny played in Keel, and his youngest brother Todd, which played in the band Tough. So we talk all about this and much, much more. So here he is. Check him out. Mr. Greg Chiasson from the Kings of Dust.
And there he is, the one and only Mr. Greg Chiasson.
How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you at?
I'm in Nashville.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So I got to thank you right off the bat because I guess it's about around Christmas time. Our mutual friend, Mr. Dave Tedder, reached out to you to do some pricing for some guitars for me for a divorce I was going through. So thank you for that.
Oh, cool. Well, not cool that you got a divorce, but, you know, cool that I could help.
No, trust me. It was cool. It was totally cool.
All right, then.
It was a good thing.
Upward and onward.
Yeah, exactly. So you're back. Were you expecting to be this far back into the music business? I mean, for the most part, you were pretty quiet over the years.
I kind of got out of the music business so I could raise my kids, and then when my kids got older, I got the offer to go out with Jake's Red Dragon Cartel.
Right.
And that kind of put me back on the map. I mean, I always kind of was doing music. As a matter of fact, I had the whole Kings of Dust thing kind of going at that point, too. But in a way, it was almost just kind of like so far under the radar. It was almost just like a local band. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
But playing with Jake again put me right back on the radar again, so that when the Kings of Dust thing finally came to fruition, it got a lot of publicity and notoriety right out of the gate. So, I mean, in that regard, it was great. But I had no idea of two things. I had no idea what a big deal it would be with me playing with Jake again, and then I had no idea that so many people would, still be interested in anything that I was doing. And the response from the Kings of Dust CD kind of proves that there is quite a bit of interest out there still. So
right,
it's
been
a pleasant surprise.
Now, how the whole thing come about with you and Jake getting back together? Like, were you surprised that, I mean, did he reach out to you to join up with him again? Or
we've always been friends and maintained, dialogue from time to time. Like every couple of weeks, usually he'll send me a text or I'll send him one. And then he came to Phoenix to visit his now wife, someone in her family. And so we hooked up and had dinner and sat around, and he played me the first Red Dragon Cartel CD, which I knew he was making, because he'd kind of been, in hibernation for a long time, and then came out and was making this record. And so he played it for me, and I liked the record, but he was unhappy with kind of the bass playing aspect of it.
Okay.
But he was kind of committed to that guy. I can't remember the guy's name now. And so they were going on tour, and things weren't going exactly the way he wanted it. I guess the guy's primarily a guitar player and not really a bass player, and Jake always has something specific in mind from a bass player's, you know, what he expects from a bass player.
Sure.
And so when they were going to play in Phoenix, he asked me if I would play the show in Phoenix. They weren't going to bring the bass player. And I think it was kind of a fact-finding mission for him to ask me to do it, to just kind of see what it would be like to play with, you know, someone that played like me. And, of course, Jake and I have a long history together. And, you know, obviously we enjoy the way each other, you know, does his job. And so I went and played that one show, and it went really good. They really enjoyed it. And it actually made me think, wow, I could actually do this again. Matter of fact, we were playing, and the singer in Kings of Dust, Michael Beck, was standing on the side of the stage with his son. And I walked over to him in the middle of a song and said, I think I could actually do this again. And so I had a really great time doing it. They wanted to know if I would be interested in being in the band. They were going to change bass players. But at the time, I had commitments. This was in March of 2014, and I had commitments all the way till August 1st, 2014, things that I was committed to do. I was teaching little kids how to play baseball, and I ran a summer camp for a place in Tempe called Arizona World of Baseball, and I was committed to 9 weeks of that. And plus, I enjoyed that anyway. So I said, if you're still unhappy, call me on August 1st. And he called me on August 1st, and he goes, do you want to do it? And I said, yeah. I mean, it was a number of reasons. I enjoyed playing in the band. I liked the guys that were in Red Dragon Cartel. I thought it was a great band. I liked playing with Jake, obviously. But also, my kids were grown and had never seen me play in that sort of atmosphere. You know, they'd sure. seen me play in like the local club cover thing, but they'd never seen me do something on the level of, you know, what we had done in Badlands. And so I wanted them to kind of experience that. And so there was a whole number of reasons to do it. Now, I had Kings of Dust going at the same time, but and I just told Michael, I said, I'm going to put Kings of Dust on hold while I go do this. And then when I'm done, you know, when we're not on the road or recording with Red Dragon, we'll just keep Kings of Dust going, because it was always my plan to do that. We had already put 2 or 3 years into it at that point. Wow. With different musicians. And so at that point, we had our current drummer, Jimmy Taft, and our guitarist, Ryan McKay. And I wanted to really finish it because I thought I had something going there. I liked the players. I thought it was a great band. And I thought I could probably do both. Well, what happened right. was after the Red Dragon tour was over, when we were going to go on the road in April of 2015, I was diagnosed with cancer. And so I had to quit Red Dragon and take all the, I had stage 4 cancer. So I had to go through the whole treatment thing. And by the time I was done with that, 4.5, 5 months later, I was so kind of burned out from all the treatment and everything that I had went through that I just really wasn't that interested in even finishing Kings of Dust. So it just kind of lay dormant for, I don't know, 3.5 years till finally I felt, you know what, I think I have enough energy to do this. Let's do it. So the guys were real gracious as far as, you know, Jimmy and Michael and Ryan. And they were like, whenever you're ready to do it, we'll do it. They kind of waited around for me, which I can't say enough, you know, how grateful I am for that. And then we wrote some more songs and put it together and put it out. But I enjoyed my time with Jake. And, you know, at some point in my life, maybe him and I will play together again. We have a longstanding friendship. And I like what he does. But by the same token, I really like what I do sure. with Kings. I know he likes what he does in Red Dragon. I like what I do in Kings. It'd be awesome to do some shows together at some point. I don't know whether that'll ever happen. And musically, we're in the same, we're similar in some yeah. respects, you know. It's not, neither, I'm not trying to do what he does. It just happens to that the stuff that I do write and the stuff that I do come up with and then what we do in Kings is very similar to kind of what he does. We have the kind of the same influences and mindset, so. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a good match.
All right, so let me. I got a couple questions out of all that. First
sure.
off, the first show that you played with him in Tempe, which was in from what it sounds like, was in Jake's mind was a tryout gig for you to see if it would work. Did you have any idea that's what he was thinking at that point?
It crossed my mind because him and I had been talking for the previous 3 or 4 months, and I knew he was unhappy with his bass player. So I had a feeling that, you know, it just seemed like such an odd thing. Hey, you want to do this one gig with us? I hadn't actually played with Jake since the early 90s. And so we got together to rehearse at Sound Vision, which is owned by Michael Beck, the singer in Kings of Dust, which is actually where we recorded the Kings record.
Right.
And we played together for the first time since like 93. And it was pretty magical. It was like we had played together the week before.
Wow.
So there was obviously some people always say there's something magical that happens when Jake and I play together. And I was certainly feeling that day. And I think he was too. And I think everyone that was there was. So I have a feeling that, you know, I wouldn't think it was like an audition. It was more just to see what it would be like to play with an actual bass player that Jake liked the style of. Jake always liked the style that I play, so I think that I just wanted to see whether that actually fit in and whether I still could actually hang or not. I think he was really curious to see whether I still had the sauce, so. And so was I, actually, to see if I still had the sauce.
Now, how about which I didn't even realize this until, like, going through and researching, that you had cancer. Like, I mean, you had stage 4 cancer.
I had 8 months to live.
Yeah.
In April of 2015.
That's what I was going to say. Like, did they say, like, you had so long to live? Like,
yeah, they gave me between 8 and 11 months. They said, you have to go in right now. And at the time, my daughter was young. She was still only, I think, 15 or 16. And I said, yeah. I said, I got a teenage daughter that's going to need me to be around for a few more years. So I ain't going anywhere. Whatever the treatment is, whatever the protocol is, I'll take it. I don't care what it is. So within a week of that, I had surgery. They removed all my lymph nodes on the left side of my neck.
Okay.
And then I had 41 radiations and 15 chemos. Went from 195 pounds to 121 pounds in 5 months. And I went from looking like a pretty healthy guy to an old man in a pretty short span.
Holy cow.
It's pretty brutal, the treatment for that. I had the same kind of cancer that Dave Mustaine had, or Bruce Dickinson,
okay.
Tom Hamilton, similar in some ways to Eddie's, Van Halen, and there's a number of, oh, Ricky Rocket. Same. It's that same cancer brought on by HPV.
Right.
And the treatment at that time, it's a little different now. If I was diagnosed today, it would be different. But it was back then, that was the treatment. It was a radical treatment to basically save your life. So,
wow.
The good thing is, if you have cancer brought on by HPV, your chance of your success rate is between 85% and 95%. Whereas if your cancer mine was on my tongue. If it's brought on by nicotine, your survival rate is 50%. So mine was brought on. I've never smoked or dipped or any of that kind of stuff. So mine was brought on by a virus. So I'm doing good now. I mean, I have some side effects from it, but, you know, I'm still here to bitch about it.
No, I guess you do. You like go over so often to get checked up and everything?
This October will be my 5-year checkup, and that is the. If you can get to the 5-year mark, they consider you completely, you know, I mean, I may get some other form of cancer, which in this lifetime, who doesn't these days?
Yeah.
But the chances of this reoccurring is very slim. I go for a couple checkups a year, and he says how great I look, so I know he's a liar. you know, again, any day above ground is – any day is better than any day below it. And,
absolutely.
You know, for me, when you're diagnosed with, and when they tell you have X amount of time to live, I just consider this extra time. We're in extra innings now, and yeah. I'll take whatever I can get. My daughter is now 21 and a half. So I've been there to make sure that she, you know, knows which direction she's going in, which she does. My son is 20, he's 28, and I have to make, and I wanted to make sure that he, you know, they're grown-ups now. Their path is ahead of them, and I've done my job. And I feel like I did my job as a parent, and I'm happy with it.
Nice. Now, once you got back in, like, with Jake and Red Dragon Cartel, and you're out there now and you're touring around, was it something that years later, were you thinking to yourself, like, yeah, I missed this, I wanted to do this, or was it like, the touring life's not for me anymore?
I mean, there's always a certain aspect of touring that's a drag. I mean, you're out 24 hours. You don't get paid for the hour and a half you're on stage. You get paid for the 22 and a half hours you're not. And so it can be tedious. And I think we did, 40 some odd shows in the span of 3 months. But I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being on stage. I enjoyed being back out, you know, in the public eye. Like I said, I enjoyed being in the band. I think Darren, who's still the singer, is a great singer, and he was my roommate on the road, and we're really good friends. Jonas, I thought, was a really good drummer. And Jake is Jake. He's my, you know, he's my best friend, and I like everything he does musically, so I enjoyed that aspect of it. And I also had a good time seeing the people again, the fans, whatever. And I'm kind of a sightseer anyway, so I would always go off and just check out things in whatever town we were in.
Nice.
And it kind of made me interested, you know, to keep the Kings of Dust thing going as well, because I thought that I was kind of seeing how people reacted to what we did in Red Dragon, and I thought it would be possible to get a similar reaction with Kings of Dust, because I knew the material was, you know, from the same era styling.
Right.
If that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, actually I was going to say that too. Like, I mean, there is a like similar sounds with Kings of Dust and Badlands. And I was thinking to myself, like, do you feel now like, with the songwriting with both now, like you're going to get, like more props now for possibly your contributions to Badlands compared, you know, with Kings of Dust coming out there now, and you can tell like your fingerprint is on it. You were a major part of Badlands as well as this Kings of Dust.
Well, in Badlands, Jake was the main writer. I mean, you know, we'd all throw in our bits and bobbles in there and see what was going on, and occasionally I contributed a song, but I really liked the way Jake wrote, and I'm not the kind of person that writes music for, you know, because it's so cathartic or something. It's not something that I do. I don't sit around and write songs all the time. I only write when I have to. So, you know, Jake kind of had the writing part of Badlands completely under control, and I was fine with that. Like I said, I liked the way he wrote. However, he let me write my bass lines the way that I, you know, the way that I interpreted it, his music. And I think that if there's anything that shows that my stamp on Badlands, it would be from the bass lines that I wrote and how we all kind of contributed, the four of us, into making the songs into what they turned into. In Kings of Dust, I'm the main writer, at least on that first record. And because my influences are the same as Jake's, we grew up in the same time period. I think that that's where a lot of people kind of get the tie in between what Kings of Dust does and how similar it sounds to some of the stuff that Jake wrote. Also, Jake doesn't really write with a, you know, real simplicity in mind. It's a lot of moving parts in his music. If you listen to anything in Badlands or what he does in Red Dragon, there's a lot of moving parts. I always enjoyed that because it makes the music more challenging. It makes it more interesting. And so I've always written that way as well. And so when I was writing for Kings of Dust, I, you know, put those same ingredients in, not to try to copy anything or to be, to have people think that it was me trying to do what Badlands did. It's just the way that I hear music.
Sure.
And I wear my influences on my sleeve. And if you hear any Zeppelin in there or any Free or Humble Pie or Sabbath or whatever it is you hear in the Kings of Dust music, that's probably pretty close. So, I mean, I enjoy the comparisons and the similarities, but it's not something that I set out to do. It's just kind of, it is what it is sort of thing.
Now you mentioned that the Kings of Dust was already, you know, in the works, and then guys were already working on music and stuff like that once you ended up back with Jake. But it sounds like, too, while being with Jake, you still, it was like sparking your, I guess, interest or just spark in general to really want to do Kings of Dust even more.
Yeah, I did, because when I was out with Red Dragon, seeing the response to, we played quite a few Badlands songs and we played some Ozzy songs at that point. Seeing the people's response to that made me realize, and also the response to the Red Dragon Cartel music, I would be remiss to not mention that, made me realize that kind of music was still relevant. And then when you see bands like Rival Sons and Dirty Honey and Greta Van Fleet, and there's a whole bunch of other ones that I can't think of right off the top of my head, it makes you realize that there is a place for that kind of music. And I kind of found that out when I was on the road with them. So I thought, you know, when we do finish the Kings of Dust record, I think there'll be a market for it. You know, you never know how many people are going to like something. And I never did a project or wrote a song with the idea, oh, wow, people will really like this. I kind of write what I write. We kind of write what we write in Kings of Dust. We kind of just do what makes sense to us, and if people like it, we're, you know, that's a happy accident. But it did make me think that there would be a lot more chances of that happy accident happening when I saw the response, you know, to what I did with Red Dragon Cartel, you know, the way that people responded to that material and the way that band was structured and just the whole musical format of how Jake did Red Dragon. It made me realize that, wow, you know, this kind of music isn't dead. Yeah. And the response to Kings has been very gratifying, because I was right. There are a lot of people that really like that kind of music, and who knew?
So. Now, I guess this helped you know, beside people actually hearing the music, you guys actually did a Kickstarter. So when you did that, were you kind of scared? Is anybody going to help us kickstart this thing off?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny, because, you know, I don't ever think too far down even before I got sick, you know, I never thought too far down past the next bend in the road. And that's certainly the way that was. I mean, when they suggested the Kickstarter, the other guy suggested it. I didn't really know anything about it. And I said, well, how's that work? And they said, well, we want to get this X amount of money, because the recording process, Michael owns the studio, so we didn't have to pay for that.
Right.
But we wanted to do like a real album cover with an 8-page booklet and to print X amount of CDs. And the whole mixing and mastering thing was done out of our shop and all that sort of thing. So we did have some expense to it, but we didn't have the money to do it. So they explained, okay, we're gonna do this. If we want to get $4,000 or whatever, or $2,000, I think was our goal. And I said, wow, that seems like a lot of money. And, you know, I said, what if we don't get 2,000? What happens to these people's money? And they said, well, then it goes back to them. And I went, okay. So it seemed like a fairly low risk for the people investing. You know, if it did, and to be perfectly honest, if we couldn't have got the amount of money that we needed to fulfill the Kickstarter, I'm sure we would have found the money somewhere else. Armed robbery doesn't seem like too smart, you know. collecting aluminum cans. I think if you get enough of them, you can weigh them out and make some money. And so, I mean, Jimmy could go back to gigolo work. Oh, come on, Jimmy. Just kidding. It just seemed like an interesting way to go. Well, we ended up making $6,000 on the Kickstarter, so it allowed us to, you know, do everything we wanted to do to put out a quality record. And again, that just kind of made me realize that, again, there's that many people that are interested in that kind of music. And also that still had some kind of interest in what it is I do. I remember Jake telling me when we were on the road, I said, so were you surprised to find that people would be that interested in what you were doing all these years later? Because it had been, I don't know, 15 years or so since he'd been in the public eye, maybe longer. And he said, yeah, actually, he goes, I didn't think anyone would care anymore. And I was in exactly the same position. I had taken myself out of the public eye. I had turned down numerous gigs with name bands. And I just was kind of happy being dad and being a baseball coach. And I didn't think anyone would care anymore, or that if anyone did, it would be a super small amount.
Right.
Come to find out, you know, that there were a lot of people that were kind of, you know, not exactly waiting, but pleasantly surprised when I came back on the public eye, which certainly surprised me. And I know Jake was real surprised. I mean, the response to his return was bigger than mine because he's Jake E. Lee and I'm not. But the response to him and I together again was like, man, this is the closest that they'll ever be to a Badlands reunion, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I was like pleasantly surprised and very enthusiastic to put Kings of Dust out there because people seemed to be really interested and they hadn't forgot about me.
So, now, do you know if Jake's heard the Kings of Dust album? Or?
Yes, he has. I sent him a copy.
Nice.
He likes it. He likes it. He likes the songs.
Cool.
So,
now, with the recording process of this, you guys kind of like did it old school way where you guys were together. It wasn't like, oh, let's email a track back and forth.
No, we all were in the same room. I'm fortunate that I've got to play with some great musicians over the course of my long career. And the guys I play with now, Jimmy's a fantastic drummer. Ryan's a great guitarist. Beck, besides just being an excellent singer, is a really – he's a wonderful lyricist. I really like what he has to say because he doesn't write your typical, I went to a bar and picked up a chick and the next thing you know, whatever. I don't, you know, that doesn't interest me at my age. Never, it wouldn't interest me at any age as far as the songwriting aspect of it. But, you know, when we got together, it just seemed like it was very natural. So the whole recording process, we did it live. I mean, all the drum and bass tracks are done. There's no overdubs on them. They're done live.
Nice.
in less than four takes. Some of them one and two takes. We were rehearsed enough, well enough that we could pull that off. And so there's very little punches. There's no punches on the drums. There are very little punches on the bass. Very little. Most of the rhythm guitars that Ryan did were done on the spot. So the only real stuff that got added to it was, you know, some guitar solos and some overdubs guitar-wise and whatever Michael wanted to do on the vocals. The rhythm tracks are all pretty much live and clean in the studio. So I really wanted that kind of analog, old-school approach. The second and third Badlands albums are done that way. I've done some other records that way as well. And I really wanted to I just like that more analog, warm sort of feel, even though
sure.
The record is done with Pro Tools, the way it's done is it's not really done as let's stick this part in here, let's pitch correct this, let's voice correct this. This is all, if you couldn't pull it off, then we started over. So
right.
We wanted to really get that live sort of feel, that very open live sort of thing, and I think we achieved that.
Now, you guys are doing something that I'm a little shocked at. I mean, it correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no digital downloads or streaming going on with the album yet. It's just physical copies of CDs.
Yeah, I you know what? There's a couple of reasons for that. We want to put it on vinyl.
Okay.
And so we want to try to make, you know, some money back from the initial release of the record so we can put it on vinyl because it's going to be expensive. It has to be a double record because there's over 60 minutes of music on the record.
Oh, wow.
We can't put it on one vinyl, and I don't want to take anything off the record. And, you know, we did this really cool 8-page booklet, and all the lyrics are on there. So I wanted to kind of, you know, again, sticking with the old school approach, I wanted to kind of go old school that way. You know, back when I used to buy records in my day, and even in the Badlands days, and even in the 90s, you weren't buying downloads. You had to buy a right. whole record, and you couldn't just cherry pick one or two songs. And to be perfectly honest, I think that all the songs on that record, people always ask me which is my favorite. I couldn't give you my favorite. I actually like them all, which I normally don't say something like that. normally I don't like everything that I do. So I thought that everything deserved the right to be heard, and a lot of the response has been very positive that way. Wow, every song, each song's better than the next, blah, 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 that sort of thing. And the other thing is, when you do the download thing, sonically things change because they have to add compression to make that on there, and there's very little compression on our record. So that big open, warm feel that you get off the actual CD or off it when it goes to vinyl won't really be as evident when it goes to the download. So we will at some point probably do that because it's kind of the way that it is now. But it's always was my idea that we would wait for a while. And, you know, if people were really interested in it, they would buy the actual disc.
Right.
And, I mean, we've sold somewhere north of 2,000 of them, which, you know, in the old days would be a failure, but in these days it's considered a raging success.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're on our third pressing of them, and they're in a lot of record stores, so people are actually searching it out and buying it that way. I don't know when the download, Spotify, Apple, I don't know when all that's going to happen. At some point it probably will, but I would say if it does, it won't be till the fall.
Wow. Now, have you guys even played any live shows yet?
Never.
Wow.
We've never done a live show, not even here locally in Phoenix. However, we did have shows booked. We had a dozen or so dates through Texas and Oklahoma that were booked. We had some stuff back east that where people were interested in us. We were trying to just string some dates together. And when COVID-19 came along and reared its butt ugly head, that kind of screwed everything up for everyone. And whether Kings of Dust can go play a live show isn't very important considering, you know, what all else is going on. So when the world gets back to normal, whenever that is, we'll still be around and we'll do some live shows then. And I would love to do a live show. We've never done one. I think it'll be really good. I mean, like you said, the players are excellent in my mind, and I think the record bears that out. But I'm not – while I'd like to go do a live show, I want to make sure where people can go there and feel like that they're safe while they're there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not just for Kings of Dust. That's for any band.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, we were going to shoot a music video, an actual video, and we decided to put that on hold till we get on the backside of this COVID-19 crap. And then we'll do that as kind of a precursor to, okay, we're going to be hitting the road here soon. We're not going to go on any 4 or 5 month tour, but, you know, do a couple weeks here or there.
Sure.
And maybe some flying dates. There was a couple dates in Japan that were, it looked like we were going to get to go over there. That's all kind of on hold. And there was even a couple things in Europe that are now kind of on hold. So we're just kind of like everyone else waiting to see when this is going to happen.
Right. You know?
And when it's available to us, we will jump on it.
Nice. Now, and I got to ask you too about your whole family. So I mean, you have the three bass playing brothers that, and it kind of always reminded me growing up as like the brother athletes that made it to the big leagues between you, Kenny, and Todd. You know, getting the record deals and making pretty big name for yourselves. Did you guys ever picture it like that growing up, like three bass playing brothers?
You know, I'm 10 years older than Kenny, and Kenny kind of became a bass player because he used to kind of help me move gear when I was in local bands. And when he graduated from high school, I gave him a bass, much to my parents' dismay. And so he, you know, became a bass player and was successful and was a well-known bass player, was a great bass player. And then Todd, I think, is 13 years younger than me.
Okay.
And so I think he's more influenced by Kenny than he is by me. By the time Todd, you know, was old enough to really understand what was going on, I didn't live at home anymore. I mean, even when Kenny became a bass player, I didn't live at home anymore. But Kenny and I have always been pretty close. And it was always kind of cool, I thought, that the three of us all, you know, got to play in bands that had record deals and all made kind of our own mark, our own way. I mean, Todd, yeah, the way that Todd approached it's different than the way Kenny did, which is different than the way I did. I always make the joke that most people get to be the best bass player in their own family, but in our family, it was always a fight.
That's too funny. So, all right, so where should we tell everybody to go? Like, where's the best place to buy the album, Kings of Dust?
We have a Facebook page, Kings of Dust Facebook page. We also have an Instagram page, Kings of Dust. And we have a website now, kodband.com. God, I hope that's right. I think it's .com. And you can order the CD off there. We also have T-shirts and stickers, and there will be a lot of people have wanted posters, and so we're doing all that. Our publicist, Dave Tedder, has been really on the ball as far as, you know, kind of keeping us in the public eye while all this other stuff is going on. So if anyone's interested, you can go to any of those sites. If I gave the wrong website name, just go to the Facebook page. Or find me on Facebook and say, hey, dude, where can I get your record? And I'll say, Groovy, here's where you go.
Actually, I did see you on Facebook, and I was checking out that killer, beautiful 70 Charger you have.
Oh, yeah. My toy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. If you like a car that gets 5 miles to the gallon, it's the best. Especially now that gas is cheap, I can actually afford to drive it. But no, it's a great car. Yeah, it's a great car. Send me a friend request.
I will. You know what? I'm on her now. You know, I can't send you a friend request.
Pardon me?
It says I can't send you one. You don't have it set up to get a friend request.
Sure, I do. I get them. I get 25 a day.
Wow. Well, maybe hit the limit or something.
I know, because I think the limit's 5,000, and trust me, I delete enough people for their stupid political posts that I'm only at about 4,500.
Well, I'll shoot you a message on here. You can send me one because
I'll give you the option.
But, all right, Greg, well, thanks, man, for doing this. It was great talking to you, and looking forward to hearing more from you. And hopefully this COVID-19 will be over soon, and you guys can get out there and start doing some shows.
Yeah, that would be great. We're looking forward to that. I appreciate the support from you and from all the people out there. And my last thing I will say is if you like 70s-style hard rock with a little something-something extra with what I think is kick-ass musicianship and vocals and all that kind of 70s old-school vibe, come and check out Kings of Dust.
Nice. Awesome, Greg. Thanks again, man. And I'll shoot you over a message on Facebook.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Talk to you later.
Bye.